therefore ensure that the right rural areas are indeed provided for?
Two things. Number one, Title II, the net neutrality regulations, take us in the opposite direction. They reduce competition and they increase what is called digital redlining. So companies have more of an incentive to look at rural areas or low-income urban areas and say, you know what, we're not going to get enough of a return on the investment there. Let's not deploy. But secondly, we want to make sure that everybody has the internet access that they need and want. And so I've got a very proactive pro-consumer agenda to promote internet access, especially for those on the wrong side of the digital divide.
U.S. President Donald Trump to unveil a tax plan slashing corporate rates and offering multinational businesses major tax breaks on overseas profits. He will propose cutting taxes paid by publicly traded companies to 15%, down from 35%, and taxing overseas profits at just 10%. The last time the U.S. tax code saw an overhaul, 1986. A senior White House official saying Trump would like to see Congress pass a tax reform bill by next fall.
Again, let me just comment. What this is about is creating jobs and creating economic growth. And that's what massive tax cuts and massive tax reform and simplifying the system is what we're going to do. The AMT is just another example of a third complicated set of rules.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's April 27th. Thursday, it's April 27th, 2017. I'm a day behind every day this week. Have you ever get in one of those ruts where it just seems like a day that it is not, and then you even write it down on paper and say it out loud to millions of people over the radio? Wow. It's kind of a rough start to the morning, right? But we're glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. At least I think it's another business day. We've got lots to talk about today. We've been reading a lot about the tax reform, tax plans outlined yesterday. We're going to be going into that into some detail later in the program. In our second segment, we'll be joined by an expert on this from the University of Illinois to give us sort of the numbers and dollars and cents on this. That'll be in our second segment. In just a few seconds, we'll bring in our thought leader for this Thursday. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Just barely, though. Dow futures are up 13. S&P and NASDAQ futures appear to be flat this morning, even after the big tax unveil yesterday. Crude oil is at $49.19 a barrel, down almost a full percent. Around the globe this morning, the stocks generally in Asia are lower with the Nikkei off. The Hang Seng is higher, but everything else seems to be lower in Asia. In Europe, all of the arrows are pointing down, with the FTSE in London leading the way off almost a half a percent this morning, followed by the CAC and then the DAX, everything lower in Europe. A couple of stories we're watching for you that developed overnight around the area. First, the United story. You heard that in the news if you were tuned into that at the top of the hour. United says it could go as high as $10,000 in paying to re-accommodate passengers, as it is known in their agreements there. $10,000 they could pay as opposed to the $850 they offered the passenger who was forcibly removed from a plane here in Chicago. Also, United saying it is going to cut back on those overbookings. Some of this has undoubtedly come in the wake of threats for legal action on this and lawsuits, not to mention legislative action. Chicago area Congressman Jan Schakowsky among those proposing legislation to cut overbooking on the airlines. Samsung Electronics reported its best quarterly profit in more than 3 years this morning and forecast improvement for the full year as its semiconductor division posted higher income, its highest income ever. And President Trump is going to direct his administration to initiate an investigation starting today into whether aluminum imports are jeopardizing U.S. national security. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says the president will sign a memo ordering him to determine the impact of rising aluminum imports. High-purity aluminum is in a number of defense applications, including military planes and the armor plating of military vehicles. Trends in commercial real estate in the Chicago area, the topic of our thought leader conversation today. We're happy to have with us Greg Worsak. He's the Senior Vice President and Senior Regional Manager of Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. And he's with us for our thought leader conversation. We do this every Thursday. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve.
Good to see you.
Great to be back.
Spring has sprung. How are things going in your world?
We're heading into the busy season right now, traditionally with commercial real estate lending. Just after spring break, until the end of June. It gets very, very busy for us.
Is there a hot spot or a hot trend that you're seeing?
We're seeing pretty good strength from all the asset classes, quite honestly. Still quite a bit of demand for multifamily. Office has really picked up quite a bit, especially in Chicago. And we're seeing a lot more storage, medical office, and quite a bit of industrial, a lot of infill.
We often focus on Chicago and don't really mention the suburbs that all that often in our conversations. But how's the health of the suburbs?
The suburbs are actually very strong. We're seeing terrific opportunities. I mean, it's a series of submarkets, so depending on what they're trying to do in each one of those submarkets, there's a lot of real interesting opportunities where there hasn't been much development in the last 20 to 30 years, especially town centers where there's a metro stop. There's a lot of unserviced needs there in terms of for sale product, multifamily, nice apartment buildings that haven't been built in years. There's some retail opportunities. So there's been some really interesting deals that we've done in the last couple of years.
And so what do you think might develop in those areas? Are we looking for fast food going in near there or a grocery? What do you see happening?
You know, most of that seems pretty well established. What we're seeing more of is maybe redevelopment of some of these retail storefronts, making it a little nicer town center. But the big thing we're seeing are new apartments and for sale opportunities. A lot of people want to downsize out of their homes into in-town living in their communities. You know, the kids go off to school. They don't need the big house anymore, but they want to stay in the community. They're still entrenched. And some choose to downsize into ownership, which is condo. And then others, which is one of the big trends, is a lot of empty nesters going into apartments. You sell the home, you untap all that capital, you invest it, and you become a renter. It gives you a lot more flexibility.
Mm-hmm. One of the data points from this week, we saw housing starts come out and building permits, construction permits are up. Even though we didn't see much building in the last month or so, people have pulled a lot of those permits. Are you seeing that on the ground as well?
We're seeing it pretty significantly. There's a lot of pent-up demand to the extent that we can, our clients can get it entitled and get it built. If it's well-located, priced right, nice design, it's doing extremely well. All the projects that we're financing are sold out or near sellout.
It seems that this spring has been, from a weather standpoint, pretty good, pretty stable. Is that helping these numbers and helping the arrows go up?
It's helping quite a bit. In fact, I would say the mild winter really helped because a lot of projects that generally get mothballed, with the mild winter we had in Chicago, they worked right through the winter. We had so many mild days that a lot of the projects are ahead of schedule right now.
Yeah, one of the things that I use to judge that is I live in Uptown and they're rebuilding the Wilson L station, and they've been working every day regardless. It's been nice. It's rarely that I see them not working because of weather.
We've seen it on all of our projects, so we're pretty excited because we're coming into that busy season right now for lease-up rentals. This is the big rental time. And some of that infrastructure investment, like that stop near where you live, that kind of thing really revitalizes neighborhoods, which leads into new opportunities for me because the developers see that investment, and it kind of snowballs off that in terms of further development in that community.
Yeah, because sometimes it gets lost in the headlines that we see a new metro station being built or a new L station, and there's all of a sudden, like, we'll use Wilson Stop again, a 15-story building going up across the street with condos, another down the street, another 15-story with residential and maybe even business. Those things help build the neighborhoods.
I totally agree. Another great example is the Ravenswood Metro Stop that they completely redid. There's a Mariano's right there that we financed for a very good client of ours. That was a redevelopment opportunity. We're financing the other corner on the other side, which is a mixed-use retail, office, and apartments. So when you do that kind of thing, and it's pushing down the streets in either directions as a result, that's one of the busiest metro stops in Chicago.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned Mariano's. That place alone is my Mary. That's where I go. It's more than just a grocery store. It has a bar in the lower level. It has a workout facility. It's like it's almost a gathering place for that neighborhood.
Yeah, that's one of their top performing stores. When that opened, it set some new records in terms terms of sales per square foot. And that's really what, you know, investors are looking at when they look at these grocery-anchored type developments.
We had from Cranes on earlier this week, the reporter who covered this next story, speaking again of Mariano's. This standalone grocery store in the suburbs, it's a Mariano's store, major investment, sold in 10 days. What is it about those types of properties that are so appealing?
Is that the one in Des Plaines,
Gulf Road.
We actually financed that one, too. We like grocery anchored. We like the Mariano's concept. It's new construction. It's a well managed company, and frankly, the asset became even more desirable when Kroger acquired Mariano's, because now you have a very strong investment grade company behind these outstanding real estate investment opportunities. So we like the concept quite a bit. Grocery anchored. Or even these freestanding grocery opportunities are not going away. They're not really what's being impacted by e-commerce. I think the whole concept of buying food online the way you buy everything else online is going to be slow to come. People still like the experience. Like, you probably like to go into Mariano's. There's a lot of prepared food. Look at wines. There's flowers. There's just things that you can't experience online.
Yeah, you can grab a beer and walk around in the store and do your shopping, or a glass of wine. It's kind of nice. And I like to squeeze vegetables. I like to touch it all. I'm not going to be one of those online people, I don't think. But you mentioned Kroger in this. So that means it's a long-term investment. A place like Kroger is going to keep it going for a while. Is that why it's a good investment?
Definitely. I mean, when Kroger's investment grade, so from an investment standpoint, people are going to now look at the Mariano assets, and there's going to be even more desire for those assets. Previously, they were owned by Roundy's, and, you know, it's a tough business. It's really thin margins, but when you've got somebody with the girth of Kroger behind it now, they're even more desirable assets. That's why you saw it traded quickly.
Yeah. Are there other locations like that? Are there other investment, commercial real estate investments like that waiting to be done, deals to be done?
There's a few of them. It's hard to tell how much Kroger is going to expand the Mariano's concept further in Chicago. We're financing one up in Bannockburn. There are a few that we're hearing about, but it remains to be seen how much runway is left with building Mariano's. I will say, you know, you look at from a redevelopment standpoint, you still have those Dominick grocery stores that were out there, and there were 89 of those. And talking to my friends at Mid-America, which are really experts in this space, you know, they said that there's only 18 left that need to be re-tenanted. 71 of them have been re-tenanted by Mariano's, Jewel, Whole Foods. So, you know, even when a grocer goes out, there's a lot of need for these types of centers in the community, so they backfill pretty quickly.
You mentioned all of the activity that's going on. I'm guessing the answer to this question, next question, is going to be yes, but maybe you could fill in some of the blanks. Commercial real estate's still a good investment. It's still a good area to be investing in.
There's, you know, all the indicators are that it's still a strong sector to be in. I have a lot of clients that have made quite a bit of wealth over the years. There's a lot to suggest that this is going to continue. It's a very desirable asset class. It's if you look back 15, 20, 30 years compared to stocks and bonds, real estate has been a really solid, stable investment. With that being said, you do have downturns. And the last one that we had, the last recession, was frankly catastrophic for some developers. And unfortunately, some of them didn't make it out. They're not in the business anymore. So, you know, it's high risk, but it's definitely high reward.
What are some of the things that one would look for if they were going to get into this investing? Do they look at the jobs picture? Do they look at the overall economy? Do they look at the price for rents, the sale prices? What are some of the factors people can look at to decide whether or not this is a safe area?
Yeah, you got to look at the macro elements like you were just mentioning, but then you also need to look at, you know, what does that mean to certain asset classes? I mean, commercial real estate has multiple asset classes, and what does that information tell you about that specific asset class? And the advice that I give my clients or people getting into real estate investment or even looking for a loan is you know, find a niche that you are interested in, that you understand, and you become an expert in that. Last night I was out for dinner with a couple of clients, and they were experts in self-storage and experts in converting commercial buildings into cool multifamily, you know, apartments for millennials that are affordable. So you got to find your niche and then figure out how those macro indicators, you know, are going to impact those niches.
We've talked before about how geography plays into this, too. Chicago is pretty well-suited right now, isn't it? I was looking at this report, the global locations trends, and here we are right after London, Paris, Amsterdam, Bangkok, Singapore, and then Chicago. So we're right up there in the top 10.
We're finally getting some great visibility globally. The reality is that most of the foreign investment really hasn't found its way to Chicago. If you look at where the money's going to, it's predominantly New York, San Francisco, really more international cities. And it's what foreign investors know are those cities, but they're finally discovering Chicago. And I think there's a lot of runway there because historically, and even if you look at 2016, we only saw about 10% of the foreign investment that was made in the U.S.
How does that how do they find us? Is it the case for local mayors and local leaders, government leaders and investors and bankers like yourself going to these places and saying, hey, come to Chicago?
I think that's part of it. I mean, Chicago has made an effort to get the name out and internationally, you know, get some exposure. Some of it's the brokerage community. When you have assets for sale, it's not just a distribution to domestic brokers. It's going more globally now. You have the likes of CBRE and JLL that are more global in their reach. And so now you're, you know, when something's for sale in Chicago, you know, it's distributed globally, especially of size. Foreign investors tend to like the big deals.
Mm-hmm. And despite, you know, some negative headlines here or there, Chicago seems to still be a place that's attracting not just business but tourism. So it still has that reputation, a good reputation, despite some of the other negatives.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. It's really improved quite a bit. And, you know, from a reputation standpoint, it's moving up quickly. But we still have issues out there with the state and city economy, the crime issues, some of this negative press. It just kind of keeps creeping in. And it does come up with the foreign investors when they're looking at assets here.
Yeah, I had last Friday off and was doing a suburbs city errands run, and it's just amazing how many cranes are in the air all over and flowers coming up too, so good signs for spring.
You bet.
All right, Greg, good to see you, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
Greg Warsek is the Senior Vice President, Senior Regional Manager of Commercial Real Estate in the Chicago Market for Associated Bank. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. You can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And we will have more to say on our podcast on this. Check it out later this morning and then again next Thursday right here on the opening bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you along for our Thursday edition. The White House unveiled the broad outlines of President Trump's plan for taxes while leaving out many of the specifics yesterday. Officials said they hope to slash corporate taxes to 15% from 35%. Specifics on that still to be negotiated. Stocks have been lifted higher by investor anticipation of big tax cuts, as well as Trump's vow to cut red tape for businesses. But there is a lot to go over, and we thought we'd bring in Professor Richard Kaplan. He is a peer and Peter and Sarah Peterson, a professor of law at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. His accounting expertise is in accounting, law, taxes, income tax especially. Professor, good to be with you this morning. Thanks for being on the opening bell.
Thank you for having me.
So where do we begin here? Is there a thumbnail that we could give people about who are the winners and losers in this tax reform plan?
I think the biggest single takeaway is that there's really nothing new here, that although it's called a tax plan, this is a one-page campaign document that really reveals nothing more than what President Trump ran on. If you compare this to the campaign document in early 2016, it's virtually word for word. The only thing that was added was a sort of timetable that he's going to be spending much of the month of May working on input and so forth. But in terms of the particulars, the changes to standard deduction, the elimination of many itemized deductions, that was all telegraphed during the campaign, and the big tax cuts in business and for upper-income individuals, again, were part of the wish list or the campaign document, however you want to put it, that President Trump ran on. And there's really no additional detail, no understanding of trade-offs or who are really going to be the winners and losers in details. This is not even really a starting point because it doesn't have legislative language. It's just a kind of very broad brush. Here are the goals. This is our wish list. People who worry about the estate tax wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. People who are in upper income brackets would face lower brackets. How this would all be financed without having a major expansion of the federal deficit is completely ignored or sort of to be announced.
Yeah, and those are big things, too. Let's take those last two, because you can't get the conservatives, Republicans, you can't get the Democrats, you can't get the conservatives with that deficit increase, and you can't get the Democrats when it hurts people with lower incomes, right?
That's correct. The general plan doesn't hurt lower incomes as much as doesn't really do much for them. The way this plan is structured, there are only winners. It's a very happy plan. Some categories of people win better or win more than others, but there are really no losers other than people who have very high state and local taxes because that deduction would be eliminated. On the other hand, by lowering tax rates to having only three brackets, 10, 25, and 35, the projection would be that most people would be coming out ahead. In fact, this is, if there's a theme to this, is everybody gets a tax cut. You may remember Oprah's show where everyone wins a car. Well, this is the tax plan equivalent. Now, there's very little pain here. It's almost entirely gain for everyone.
In your experience, you mentioned earlier this is basically a one-page summary. How many pages and how much time generally does a fully comprehensive tax plan entail?
Well, it usually ends up taking much longer and much more time than it should because you've got 535 people in Congress. Every one of them thinks the tax code is messed up the way it is, and they all want their individual input. But this is not a parliamentary system where the prime minister says, here's our plan, and everyone in the party has to vote for it. Everybody is a co-author, and so they want their input, and typically it's taken at least 3 to 4 months. That was the shortest one in 2003 under President George W. Bush. Under President Reagan, it took over a year. And the length is comparable because people want special provisions to basically show that they were part of this process.
What do you think is going to be the difficulty level in this? You mentioned how long it took with Reagan. The Trump administration says it would like to have this done by late next year. The Congress now is a lot different than it was with Reagan, isn't it?
Well, you are certainly correct about that, and the concern with the deficit is much greater than it was then. At the time of President Reagan, there was both a notion that we could cut taxes and there would get tremendous growth and bring unemployment down and that sort of thing. In the present circumstance, not only is the deficit already rather huge, unemployment is already historically low. And the other major contention is that the parties have become much more polarized and very few people left in the middle to compromise. What we saw during the recent health care debate is that the Republicans are very much split, and no one was even talking about the Democrats on the idea that they weren't going to participate at all. That wouldn't necessarily replicate itself in taxes, but there are very different notions both within the parties and between the parties, and much less of an inclination than in the past to work together.
Yeah, does the failure on the health care plan, at least early on, does that not bode well for this plan?
You're exactly correct. The Republicans, almost to an individual, had been trashing Obamacare and had actually campaigned, and that was a big rallying cry. We need to get rid of Obamacare. Tax reform was in the background, but there was never any real discussion or plan, in part because almost the entire income tax is paid by about half of Americans. So it doesn't resonate with a lot of people. They're not paying much now. In many cases, they're not paying anything. So it didn't have the same visceral reaction. And so if they couldn't get the party pretty unified for health care reform, on which they had all campaigned and at least had as a top-line goal, get rid of Obamacare, it's going to be much more difficult here because taxes for many people are relatively simple, or they're able to use electronic online services. People at the top certainly pay more and have more complicated affairs, but with taxes, there are always going to be winners and losers, unless you're just going to be completely ignoring the impacts on the deficit. And given where we are, that seems to be politically impossible.
Professor Kaplan, thanks for your insight on the tax reform plan this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and I hope we'll stay in touch as this proceeds.
Absolutely. Professor Richard Kaplan at the University of Illinois Law School in Urbana-Champaign. His expertise in accounting, income tax, and more. We will definitely stay in touch with Professor Kaplan.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. On the Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, another flat to tepid start to the day on Wall Street. Dow futures only up about 12 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures have not been moving this morning. So they're flat there. Southwest Airlines stock is falling early morning today after it has reported its profits. First quarter earnings, $351 million, falling short of Wall Street expectations. Now let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning, cattle producers across the country. Pretty good day yesterday at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle futures reaching the highest level in a year, thanks to some short covering. And traders said bargain buying briefly sent some deferred live cattle months to fresh highs and up to their $3 daily price limit. April live cattle, which expires on Friday, closed up $2.20. Meanwhile, corn futures at the Board of Trade fell more than 1% yesterday. Forecasts for better Midwest planting weather and news that the White House is considering an executive order on withdrawing from North American Free Trade Agreement bothered the grain market, and we saw soybeans and corn settling lower. And it wasn't just the markets that reacted to the announcement that came from the White House that said the president or the White House is drafting a resolution to pull the United States out of the NAFTA agreement. And that brought quick response from, well, people like Ken Mashoff, who is president of the National Pork Producers Council. He said abandoning NAFTA and going back to tariffs would financially devastate U.S. pork producers. And that's your money this morning. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, April 27th, 2017. There is a lot to talk about this morning. Plenty of economic and financial news for investors to pore over. The government will report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. March durable goods data is being released as well. Freddie Mac will report this week's average mortgage rates, and the National Association of Realtors will issue its pending home sales index for March. Lots of corporate earnings out today. Ford, American Airlines, Southwest Airlines, UPS, Union Pacific, Comcast, all reporting first quarter details today of their profits and revenue. Amazon, Microsoft, Alphabet, Starbucks in there as well. Lots of things to move the markets on this Thursday, April 27th, 2017.